Good afternoon. Okay. Well, first of all, the presentation that I'll be speaking about today is in relevance to insulin resistant or pre-diabetic adolescents and really their motivations to make changes to lose weight and prevent developing type 2 diabetes. In terms of disclosures, we have no relationships to disclose. So as everyone is probably very familiar with at this time, childhood obesity is an epidemic public health problem at this point in this country and also globally. And among adolescents between the ages of 12 to 19, overweight and obesity has more than tripled, increasing from 5% to 17%. This data is relatively old, dating from 2004. We know that it's probably increased now in 2008. The problem with childhood obesity is that children who are overweight or more likely to become overweight as adults and are more likely to have significant health problems as adults as well. And so one of the consequences of overweight or obesity is insulin resistance or prediabetes. And so for those who are not really familiar about how this works, essentially the more body fat that an individual has, the pancreas is not able to keep up and produce insulin. And so you have a situation where blood sugar builds up in the system. And so having a condition of prediabetes or insulin resistance increases a person's risk of developing type 2 diabetes, and also along with type 2 diabetes, it's the risk of developing heart disease, blindness, kidney failure, and so forth. The reason why this is significant in a clinical population and also outside of a clinical population is that children or adolescents who have a type 2 diabetes diagnosis are more likely to have more serious complications. They're more likely to be sicker longer because of the early onset of the disease. So for example, instead of having an individual, an adult with a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes getting kidney failure in their 50s or 60s, you may have a young person actually having kidney failure maybe in their 20s or even 30s. But the good news is that insulin resistance or prediabetes can be reversed with diet changes and exercise. And so what research has shown is that if changes are not made in individuals, adults and in children, usually they tend to transition to type 2 diabetes within 10 years unless they make dietary and weight changes. So our goal for this particular study was to target adolescents and their parents early in the disease process to see if there was a way that we could help them to increase their exercise, make better dietary choices, and prevent progression to type 2 diabetes. So what we sought to do, we wanted to assess specific factors, specific behaviors, perceptions that would put them at risk for developing and maintaining obesity. We also wanted to get an idea of what the parents' behaviors were to see if they were doing anything or were not doing anything that could actually maintain their child's obesity or overweight status. And so the large issue as well with this particular project was to look at adolescent readiness to make changes, to see if they were ready to make specific changes that could potentially reduce their risk for developing type 2 diabetes. And so most of you, I'm sure, are familiar with the transtheoretical stages of change, which basically is a change theory, uses stages to assess readiness to change behavior. So there are five stages. The pre-contemplation stage is when an individual perhaps is not thinking about making a specific dietary change within a specific or long-term period, for example, 6 months. Those who are contemplators may not have, at that moment, have made that change, but maybe be thinking about or intending to make the change. Those in preparation may be taking active steps to change the behavior within the next month. And those who are in the action stage are making relevant changes at that time. And of course, those who are in the maintenance stage, those are the ones who have established a specific behavior change for a substantial period of time. And so we looked at, we have, for the data set, so far we have 14 children, which is a preliminary data set. They were all insulin resistant. The median age for this sample was about 15 years. and they were all recruited from the insulin resistant clinic at Duke. And so they were asked to complete a 40-item questionnaire that really looked for specific health-related behaviors. Now, they also completed another survey called the McKnight Risk Factor Survey. And this survey was used to see what additional factors are associated with maintaining obesity. That data is not presented here for you. They were also asked additional questions about their perceptions regarding their weight as a health risk, whether they perceived any barriers and benefits to losing weight, and also what their thoughts or perceived thoughts were about type 2 diabetes. And so here is a demographic representation of the sample. There was a pretty even split between males and females. They were all African Americans in the sample, and that wasn't necessary because that was what we selected for. The clinic happens to have a higher percentage of African Americans in the sample, and those were the ones who expressed an interest in participating at the time. And also, if you look at median weight for the individuals who participated, it was about 102 kilograms, which in pounds translates to about 230 pounds. So that was the median weight of the kids who were in the study. And if you drop your eyes below, you'll see that pretty much all of them, except for one, had a family history of diabetes. And so the eating behavior questionnaire that we use was adapted from a previous questionnaire from Sutton and colleagues that looked at a very similar sample, except it was an adult in a family practice. And so there were specific behavior areas that we wanted to look at: food portions, dietary fat, fruit and vegetable consumption, and physical activity. And so what our goal was to really, instead of asking a global question or a global construct about their readiness to become physically active, what we wanted to do was to ask more specific finite questions in terms of, you know, would you be willing to take the stairs rather than the elevator as a means of getting some type of physical activity, instead of asking, are they ready to become physically active? And so our hope by doing this was that there would be less room for misinterpretation. The individuals would be able, more likely, to say, yes, I'm ready to make this small step, instead of saying, overall, I'm ready to join a gym or spend more time outside doing physical activity exercises. And so what we found were that behavior areas, we created median composite scores for food portions, dietary fat, fruits and vegetables. And what we found for those was that those scores were elevated for those children, indicating that there would be a higher risk of maintaining overweight. So the range of the scores that we have are from 1 to 5, 1 being less risky and 5 being the most risky. So specifically for dietary fat, that particular variable was the most elevated of all of them for the adolescents' self-reported data about the types of activities that they're engaged in or the behaviors that they're engaged in. So the dietary fat variable was a 4.09. And also what we found is that there were discrepancies between what the adolescents reported they were doing and what the parents reported that they were helping their children to do. So, for example, parents tended to overreport how much their children exercised and underreported food portions, dietary fat, and fruit and vegetable intake. So two specifically that were significant were dietary fat intake and physical activity. So we see that there were significant differences between what the adolescents said that they were actually doing and what the parents said that they were helping their children to do. So if you look here at this table, this gives some of the scores that existed between the adolescents and the parents. We'll see across the board, parents were more likely to underreport or underrepresent what their children were doing in terms of food portions, dietary fat, fruits and vegetables, and physical activity. Now, all of these are scored from 1 to 5, where 5 is indicating a higher risk, except for physical activity. Physical activity was actually reverse-coded. So for exercise regularly, where we see a significant difference, adolescents were more likely to say that they exercised less than what their parents said that they were. So parents were thinking that their children were exercising at least about an hour a day, and kids most likely said that they were exercising anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes a day. Also, in terms of the perception questions that we asked them, in terms of their thoughts about their weight and diabetes, 75% of them thought that their weight wasn't a particular health risk for them, but they thought it might be a good idea to make some changes in their weight. They also indicated in terms of type 2 diabetes that it mattered what you ate, it mattered what the drinks that they drank, or how much physical activity a person gets. And some of them, most of them were actually worried about getting type 2 diabetes within the next year, but not all of them were. And so they also were able to cite some benefits to losing weight. Some of them noted that they could be a little bit healthier by losing weight. They might look a little bit better, buy smaller clothes or better clothes, and might even be able to make some new friends. So they were able to recognize some of the benefits as well of losing weight. And so in terms of behavior change or readiness to change, the majority of adolescents tended to be pre-contemplators or contemplators for all the dietary behaviors across the board. Most of them either said, no, I'm not participating in a specific activity and I don't intend to, or no, I'm not participating in a specific dietary behavior, but I may think about doing it in the near future. The fewest number of adolescents were in the preparation stage or the maintenance stage. So these were individuals who had been maintaining positive dietary behaviors. So the fewest number of those were actually at that level. But the discrepancy to an extent is that most of the adolescents were actually indeed engaging in specific activities. So, for example, when we talk about physical activity, they may not have been engaging in 60 minutes of physical activity, vigorous physical activity most days of the week, but they were doing some activity. And so in terms of the definition, the transtheoretical model theory, that would put those individuals in the action phase. And so in conclusion, as we mentioned before, the composite behavior scores for food portions, dietary fat, fruits and vegetables were elevated for those insulin-resistant adolescents, indicating to us that they were engaging in behaviors that would put them at risk or inhibit their weight loss efforts and increase their risk of getting type 2 diabetes, because a lot of the activities that they were doing was not going to be helping them to lose weight or to reduce their risk of getting type 2 diabetes. And also the noticeable discrepancies between what the parents reported and what the adolescents reported suggested that they may not have had sufficient knowledge about what their children were eating or what the physical activities they were doing, or have even little control over those things. Pretty much every parent made the statement that I can't control what my child eats. And so, and this is interesting to note, because a lot of studies that have been done looking at intervention programs have looked at children between the ages of maybe 5 to 8. But in looking at an adolescent population who are developing their self-autonomy, they have their own thoughts and wishes about what the things that they want to do, parents have been noting it's more difficult for them to actually say, this is what I want you to do, and for the child to be on board with it. And also the fact that parents were more likely to over-report their children's physical activity and under-report their food portions and dietary fat could indicate social desirability effects. As we noted by the demographics, these children are morbidly overweight, morbidly obese, and most of them have numerous other health comorbidities, high blood pressure, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and so forth. And so no parent wants to have the perception that they're not doing all that they can for their child to lose weight and prevent a lifelong chronic illness. And so as we, in further conclusion, adolescents tended to be pre-contemplators or contemplators. So these were individuals who they weren't making specific changes and they weren't even thinking about making those changes. But we did note that some of them also, due to the fact they were participating in some of those behaviors, would be in the action phase. Even though they could be classified in the action phase, these behaviors would not be enough to help them to actually make any sustainable weight loss or even prevent them from developing type 2 diabetes. So the majority of them were not very highly motivated to make any of these changes for various reasons. And most of these reasons they were able to tell me about some of the reasons why they were having difficulties in these areas. Some of it boiled down to, we don't have money for fruits and vegetables, to, I like eating fast food. And so what we'd like to do in the future are really to improve the questionnaire so that we can really tap into more effectively the readiness to make specific changes. And also what we'd like to do is include the families more into the process to help parents especially feel more empowered that they can have an impact in what their children eat and to help them have healthier lifestyles. But we also understand that there are other underlying motivations for why these kids and the families sustain their behaviors. We know there are environmental barriers. We know there are economic barriers. Also, since this is a largely African-American population, there are cultural perceptions about weight and certain weight that may be perceived as being fine and not as a health risk for them. And also in terms of self-efficacy, it's difficult to lose weight, and a lot of these kids have tried to lose weight and have not been very successful. So that makes it very difficult for them, too, to decide that they're not ready to make any specific changes at the time. So we, as we go along and look at this information, we feel that it is relevant for a clinical population at this phase to look at some things that we can do to try to help the kids and as well as the families to make specific changes so that they can lose weight and also prevent type 2 diabetes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Anita. Our next presenter is Yuka Jokero, who is an MPH student at the University of Hawaii, specializing in social behavioral sciences. Originally, Yuka is from Canada, but she wants to work and study in the Asia-Pacific region, which, as a result, led her to the University of Hawaii. Yuka's research interests include global health, minority health issues, and health education. She currently works at the University of Hawaii as a graduate research assistant on the Healthy Hawaii Initiative Evaluation Team, and she's also learned how to surf and loves it.